Yeah, let's talk about Copland, actually. In my mind, he's the quintessential American composer. So just tell me a little bit about your thoughts on Copland.
That's a great question, and I'll try to keep this simple because I have so much to say about him. He's a fascinating man because he was a young Jewish man growing up in Brooklyn, but he's become associated with what we consider to be the quintessential American voice in music. People call him the Dean of American Music, and he's given so many other titles, mostly because he began to write music that was accessible. In the early 20th century, composition took a left turn into serialism or atonal music, where tonality and the things that we really love about music were abandoned for new compositional styles. Copland went to Paris to study with Nadia Boulanger in the 20s. And merged with this avant-garde style. And some of his early music is very much like Prokofiev and Stravinsky, and some of his American friends, Roy Harris and others, began to experiment with these avant-garde languages in music. But he was encouraged by Boulanger to incorporate some things that were distinctly American. And when you listen to Copland's music, he has that fascinating aspect that while his music sounds like it's folk songs, are richly imbued with folk materials, they're original. He had the talent to do that. And in Appalachian Spring, if you know anything about his early music, you can hear some of the strident, discordant dissonance that was a hallmark of his early compositions, but he packages it in such a way and surrounds it and bookends the music with this beautiful, accessible tonality. And suddenly he wrote music that not only was popular, but it was reaching so many people. And he was responsible, especially in the 40s, when his commissions began to roll in, with saying to the world, American music and American composers really have something to say. And he embodied all the great things about the Western expansion of the time. The wide intervals of his music represent these great open spaces in the West. But there's still something so accessible and so listener-friendly about his music. I love the piece, and it incorporates, of course, Simple Gifts, the Shaker hymn tune, and he wrote it for Martha Graham, who in her own right had a distinct style of dance that was very American, with soft, supple, muscular movements, and it was just the perfect marriage. And the piece was written for 13 instruments in the beginning, which was all that he could fit into the Library of Congress, the space for which it was commissioned. And it just shows his genius about being able to write something small, later expanding it to a full orchestra, writing something that had his own personal style with those dissonant things and great inventive compositional techniques that he learned from Nadia Boulanger, but then packaging it in a language that is so accessible. What I love about this piece, and it's on the same half as the Cooling in the Peppermint Wind by Sarah Grave, is that both these composers do exactly that. They take something that is very modern in some ways, and they surround it with a language that's so accessible and aurally full of splendor. And you listen to this music, and it's so much fun to hear it and to watch it being performed. So I'm really excited about that aspect of the concert. And Copland and Grave, especially on the same half of the program.
And tell us then about the Bernstein piece, which is another, he's another quintessential American composer in a different sense, even though they're kind of the same era and even grew up in the same region and all those sorts of things, but they embody different aspects of American culture.
That's true, and Bernstein and Copland were dear friends, very, very close friends, and in fact, Bernstein was one of the first early champions of Copland's music and gave so many performances of his work. But the overture to Candide is, in this five-minute overture, it embodies nearly all the main themes of the opera or the production of Candide. You know, it's a witty, satirical play by Voltaire and extremely ribald and cutting edge for its time. Even today, it's still fresh and new. And to musically, equate what Voltaire has written into this story is quite a feat. And in the early days when Bernstein would play this music on the piano, his friends and teachers were all amazed at how well he captured certain aspects of the raw nature of Candide's foibles and journeys and exploration of life. This overture is, if I used the word effervescent before, especially describing Sarah Grave's work, this piece is also effervescent. One of the most ebullient concert openers. It begins like an explosion, and then in the middle has that gorgeous melody that is passed around instruments of the orchestra, and then it ends with a frenzy again, a little tongue-in-cheek, witty banter of sorts at the end, and it's a delightful concert opener. And the reason why it's on the first half of the program is that Michael Doherty's Trail of Tears, the new concerto for flute and orchestra, has some of the same type of language. In a conversation yesterday, Dr. Grafe mentioned the language that Michael Doherty was using and how it sounds similar to some things from West Side Story. But that was Bernstein's language. You know, in New York City, with this new energy and vibrant culture and things that really created a certain style in all the arts, Bernstein captured it. And Michael Doherty, he's from Iowa, but is a gigantic proponent and a fan of pop culture and things, everything from parades to used car lots to Superman. He's written a piece called The Metropolis Symphony based on the life of Superman. There's something about the language of these two. So our first half of the program, Bernstein and Doherty share some of these energetic reflections of their time, but they're very similar in a lot of ways. Second half of the program with the Grafe and Copeland, also the same sort of more subtle, but at the same time, extensive use of the orchestra. You hear sounds that are very distinct to these two composers, but still something that will feature an oral palate that we're not accustomed to hearing.
And talk about These pieces, they're all American, but they're all very seem influenced by their landscape. And let's talk a little bit about the important role that landscape plays in these works.
That's a great question. And one thing we haven't talked about is the connection of Sarah's piece and some, I don't know if I should say inspiration, but reflection of a Shel Silverstein poem. Cooling in the Peppermint Wind is actually a line from his poem Where the Sidewalk Ends. And Sarah, why don't you share some thoughts about that and its connection to landscape or narrative there?
Sure. Well, a lot of people probably know this poem and the collection of poetry that Shel Silverstein wrote. It was published in 1974. And the title poem, Where the Sidewalk Ends, talks about this place between where the sidewalk ends and where the street begins. And it's essentially about this place where you can escape, where things are better than they are, where you see them, actually. And in the poem, it talks about this bird that's circling above all this heat to cool in the peppermint wind. And when I wrote this piece, and it was so exciting to me, and the rhythm and the propulsion in the piece, but then with these soaring melodies, I thought that's exactly what it feels like to me. It feels like this cooling over this kind of frenetic undertone. So for me, it's more of a fantasy landscape, really, of course, with roots in my hometown.
It's fascinating, too, that both pieces on the second half of the program, Sarah's piece Cooling in the Peppermint Wind, with this connection or reflection in the poetry, is like Appalachian Spring. Appalachian Spring was written completely before a title was ever given to it. Copeland knew ahead of time that he wanted to write to a narrative about a young couple who were just married on the frontier, developing their life, and he wanted it to be episodic. This was all a proposal from the dancer Martha Graham. He embraced the idea, and he wrote the music. And it wasn't until after he was finished with the composition that she said, well, actually, there's a line from a Hart Crane poem. and it makes a reference to an Appalachian spring. And it wasn't the time, it wasn't the season. It's actually an Appalachian spring is in the water. But in subsequent years, people would come to Aaron Copland and say, "Oh, Mr. Copland, you captured the essence and the beauty of the Appalachian so wonderfully. It's just such a great thing." And he just would smile and say thank you and wouldn't tell them that he, actually the title was applied after he had written the work. And that's similar to what Sarah did also with her piece.
So the title was came after?
It did, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time perusing lots of poetry, and I particularly love children's poetry and children's books, so that's always a starting place for me.
So anyone who thinks that we just slap a few pieces together and ask people to come and hear great music will be pleased to know that these programs are so methodically chosen and researched, and again, a program like this, to me personally, this is the kind of program I would love to go and see. But because of the Arkansas Philharmonic, we try to make the concert experience listener-friendly and very comfortable by talking about the pieces at the concert, but also linking them together in a very extremely thoughtful way to show connections of composers, even when pieces are written 60 or 70 years apart. But to have these sorts of subtle collaborative aspects of the pieces. And this is really one of those programs where all four pieces are connected by being American pieces. Their languages are similar in some ways. But the first half, really, these two pieces, the Bernstein and Doherty, play off of each other. The second half, the Graf and the Copland. I think it's going to be a concert that people will remember for many, many years to come.
Well, great. Thanks so much. It sounds like a really amazing program. Thanks, Stephen and Sarah, for talking to us.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Always a pleasure.